There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Time is 12:06. This is Jonathan McConnell. Welcome to FM Talk 106.5. Sean Sullivan is on vacation this week, and I'm filling in for him. We've got a great show coming up. And in the news today, we've got the Carnival Triumph is actually making its way back in the news. They've decided that they're going to rebrand the Carnival Triumph, and I can't quite understand why after that 2013 Valentine's that I don't know that I will ever forget when it cruised into Mobile or was towed into Mobile with no power and was the quite most wonderful symphony of sickness that ever was experienced on a cruise line after having lost power for 5 days. But Carnival has decided that it's going to put it into dry dock and do a $200 million overhaul of the vessel. I don't know if $200 million can get rid of some of those stains, but if so, they should patent that process and definitely move forward for it. But it's going to be known as the Carnival Sunrise and should be out of dry dock next summer about this time. So if anybody wants to make that run across the Atlantic, I think they'll have a few extra seats on it. But I will say that was one of the greatest experiences I'd ever seen, especially in leadership from Carnival. I don't know if you remember that, Dalton, but they arrived here and all they had was a bunch of buses, and then they literally bused them back to Houston so they could fly out from there.
I remember that was a massive story around here, and you know, I can't remember if I was already here at FM Talk 106.5 when that happened, but at the time I had a Discover credit card that had Carnival on the front because it was one of those cruise points gathering, you know, credit cards where every time you spend you get points. And I went to a local restaurant right after this story broke, and everybody in Mobile and Baldwin County were talking about it. And so I ordered my food and gave them the credit card. I don't know if they thought I was a like family member of somebody who works for Carnival, or if I was Mr. Carnival, or what they were thinking there.
They thought you got a card as a money card as condolences for being on the ship.
Yeah, they were the person that took the card was apologizing to me. She was, "I'm so sorry to hear about that Carnival ship," and that was real awful. And I was like, "Listen, you know, there are cruise ships here that dock in Mobile, but I'm okay. Trust me. I'll be fine. I was not planning on being on the Triumph, and I'm certainly not planning on it now." But that was kind of a funny instance that happened when the ship came through.
You know, for a single man, I was single back in those days, and there is no better way to spend Valentine's Day than to be able to go and see 2,000 people come up on, you know, in the bay, having not bathed in days, and be able to come up and just and watch that madness unfold. It was truly amazing, and I credit Carnival for one of the happiest moments of my life. You know what's amazing, though, is that there's not a single armed person on board a cruise ship.
Really?
Yeah.
They don't have
Carnival,
security or police?
Carnival has security, but they do not have arms on board. I've actually spoken to them about this ad nauseum, but they are very anti-gun, despite having shotguns on board for the skeet shooting. But that's it. And and I'm just like, you know, like if I were a cruise vessel, I would definitely I'd be a little bit more interested in that if it was me.
That's really odd because, you know, I mean, that you never know if they're going to screen correctly. If they're trying to keep guns off the board, people can probably sneak them on if they would like to. But on top of that, it's a cruise ship. All kinds of nefarious things have happened on cruise ships.
And literally, you could pack a 3D printer in your bags, and then you could print your own gun now.
You could arm everybody on the boat by the time you load and before you get off.
In between port calls. I mean, you could literally invade Haiti with this. It would be absolutely amazing and if you wanted to do that for some reason. But speaking of, federal judge in the news today blocking the posting of 3D printing gun blueprints out there, which is a little bit interesting since once they were posted by Defense Distributed, a nonprofit out of Texas. Once they're posted, it's not like you can pull them back off the internet. So
kind of like when a song leaks on the internet, or back in the day before everybody was streaming, if somebody leaked a song, then it's out there. There's no bringing it back.
You cannot ungun yourself once it's on the internet. So it's interesting to see that. You know, and I was thinking about, I was having a discussion this morning, or at lunch a little while ago, and was talking about this with someone, and they were saying, you know, like, who's actually yelling the loudest about this? You know, is it the NRA, or, you know, who is behind this? And it's the gun manufacturers. Because they don't want, if you can take a Saturday night special, you know, a 38 special, and you can print it, and let's say the printing cost on that is $200, you know, that's $200 worth of revenue that the gun manufacturers are you know, out $200. And so I think that you know, you look at the advances and, you know, what else could we do behind this? And so I think they're probably the biggest ones behind this, because otherwise, you know, I'm not worried about people printing guns and then not, you know, not registering them, because you can. It's so easy to make a gun nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, Americans have been doing it for hundreds of years, making their own weapons. You've never always had to be part of working at Remington or working at any of these other places, and actually that's probably how so many of these companies started, in barns and backyards where they're out there making weapons for the Revolutionary War, for all these other wars we fought.
Well, Dalton, I know for a fact that you definitely have some muskets back at home that you've manufactured and made yourself. But, you know, I mean, it's one of those things that anybody with an internet connection nowadays can make their own AR-15. One thing they have to be careful of is that you have to register that weapon. If you're going to be a manufacturer of a firearm, even for personal use, you have to have a license to do that and to register it. And something you can do through an FFL. Most of them are happy to do that. I actually happen to be an FFL, happy to do that for people if they need to. But it's, you know, heck, go to Quince, or go to someone, you know, I don't know if Academy or someone big like that would do it, but there's plenty of places out there that will let you do that. Just be careful. We don't want you to become a felon accidentally. We'd rather you do something to earn it, like, oh, I don't know, lie in front of a grand jury, or, you know, have Ukrainian bank accounts or something like that. So,
I have a lot of questions, and with you being a federal firearms dealer, that's right.
Yeah, we're a class 3 dealer. So.
Well, I have a lot of questions because, you know, firearms, not my specialty. I'm an avid Second Amendment backer. I back it all the way. It's just something that, it's not a hobby that I ever took to. I don't know a lot about guns, how to make guns. You know, I know a little bit. I know enough. Sean Sullivan, who's usually in here, he knows a ton. So I usually get all of my information from him. But I've seen a lot of discussion. Initially, they were acting like these were only printing plastic guns. As far as I can tell, those usually only hold up for maybe the first shot.
Well, there's probably some pretty hard plastic out there that you could use, but no, a 3D printer can print metal as well. I mean, it's, you know, a lighter form of metal. But I think that you know, that'd be something you have to worry about if you had an entirely plastic weapon. I actually believe that it's against the law to have an entirely plastic weapon. The ATF, I think, banned that, and I'll have to check that. I can check that during one of our breaks, but I know it's illegal to have a. I'm pretty sure it's illegal to have an entirely plastic weapon. It's also illegal to have a weapon that has more than 10 imported parts. So that's why you actually... Yeah, so a lot of people don't realize this. When they have a mil-spec rifle out there, they'll say, oh, well, hey, that rifle's mil-spec. Well, every component is probably not mil-spec. Mil-spec is military specification. It's less than 1 in 10,000 parts of that weapon are, you know, considered failure. You can fail or whatnot. And so you may have, like, the firing pin, retaining pin, is mil-spec, or you may have the buttstock that's mil-spec, but to have the firing pin, retaining pin, the bolt carrier group, the upper receiver, the lower receiver, the trigger mechanism, all of that being mil-spec, there are very few weapons that are out there. Usually it's the Colt, you know, law enforcement style weapon that I have it.
What do you think the issue is? Do you think they're worried about about criminals or insane people being able to make their own guns? And why are they so worried about that if the criminals are already breaking into cars and homes to get illegal weapons? You know, that's what I don't understand about this whole debate.
Well, I think that's where it comes down to it. I think it's a gun manufacturer's debate. I mean, I think that's the biggest issue. I mean, I am a big fan of being able to track weapons and be able to. I mean, we have never, as a firearms dealer, I've never had the call of, you know, hey, you sold this weapon, it went to, you know, it committed a crime. The ATF has never done a trace on one of our weapons, thank goodness. You know, we're knock on wood, batting 1,000 right now. But, you know, it is something that it's important to be able to say, hey, this is who committed this crime, or at least we know who, we can track that weapon from there. We'll be back after the break.
is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
It's 12:20. This is Jonathan McConnell. Welcome back to FM Talk 106.5. Sean Sullivan is on vacation this week, and we are having an interesting conversation about guns right now. And I know, Dalton, you have a few more questions, but before we start with that, I do want to clarify one thing. I told you I'd do the research during the break. It is illegal to have an entirely plastic gun, so it does have to have metal components. It's illegal to have a gun that is not detectable by metal detectors.
How well do plastic guns usually hold up?
You know, I do not know.
No?
But a slingshot holds up great.
Yeah, Bart Simpson knows about that for sure. Another question I had, and I don't know if you can answer this, but the cost involved, because it seems like the media is going so insane, and I know it's crazy to think about it, that the media is going insane about this, because they never go insane about anything.
They're pretty rational.
Yeah, seriously. And I pull up, all I do is Google 3D guns to try to see, you know, what kind of discussion is going on about this. Every single article just about is of media freaking out about the possibility that people could be printing guns in their own garage and that this could be the end of the world. Somebody, if everybody has a gun, this could be a major issue. That's what they're saying. I've seen maybe one or two articles that try to thoughtfully explain what this means. And if we boil it down, and I know you already said that that the real people who don't want this to happen are the gun manufacturers, because that could be taking money out of their pocket and will be taking money out of their pocket if this becomes a major thing. But if they're trying, if the main issue is to keep guns out of the hands of people who are going to use them to injure or murder someone or rob people, the cost involved, unless you're going to make some rinky-dink gun out of plastic, which you just said is illegal, or some other material, the cost on that might be a little less. But if you're using material that will actually hold up and be a weapon that you can use again and again and again, the cost is not cheap, right? I mean, the material, and if you buy your own 3D printer, that cost adds up. So, sure, somebody could be out there printing guns and maybe selling them off illegally and not registering them, but the cost involved, I mean, we're not talking about a criminal who just decides he wants to rob a gas station and then wakes up in the morning and prints out a $20 gun and then all of a sudden he's able to use it all around town. I don't understand. Wouldn't it cost some money to actually make a weapon worth using?
Oh, I'm sure it would. It would cost a lot of money, but, I mean, here's the other thing, is that you could also build it at home for a pretty good price, too. I mean, but Dalton, and I mean, we were talking about this during the break. What is a 3D gun? Because if it's a 3D gun, what's a 2D gun?
Yeah,
what's a 1D gun? I mean, is it like just on the X-axis or is it just on the Y-axis? And it's just, you know, there is no such thing as that. All guns are 3D guns.
Right.
Unless you have to wear like special X-ray glasses in order to see them, I guess. I don't know. But so it's a 3D printed gun. Now, a 3D printed gun, yeah. Did you print serial numbers on it? If you did not, or immediately upon printing it, did you, you know, scribe in a serial number with the manufacturing location and the name of the manufacturer, you know, did you do that? No. Did you have a license to do that? No. Well, then now you've committed a crime, and that's an issue.
Yeah, I know the president, he spoke out about this, or tweeted out about this yesterday morning. He said, I'm looking into 3D plastic guns being sold to the public. Already spoke to the NRA. Doesn't seem to make much sense. I'm not sure if the NRA has come out with their take on this topic yet, but I'd be interested to see what they have to say.
You know, I would be interested to see. I'm actually very excited about Colonel North taking over the NRA. I hope he can get it into a positive direction and just advocate for safe firearms use. I mean, you know, people are afraid of guns. I understand that. But if people have a working knowledge of guns, I think that we'd be a safer place. I also think that, like Switzerland, for example, everybody in Switzerland has a firearm. You know, every home has a firearm. And you know what? It's a pretty safe place. The problem, it's not our gun culture in this country. It's our violent culture in this country that's the problem. And that's what the problem is in Chicago. And until they solve that issue, the gun control issue is not a valid one to be.
Yeah, violence, that's a major thing. And also mental health issues. There are some people that are clinically, you know, mentally unhealthy and should, honestly, there's some people that really need to be watched when in public, just because there are dangerous people out there. And I don't advocate, you know, taking the right for responsible Americans to own weapons. I think that is such a major part of what makes America. And I think that's what this guy who made these blueprints for the 3D guns that we keep seeing in the news, that's what he was all about with this. He said, his quote was kind of along the lines of, this takes down, you know, any barrier to keep any American from owning a weapon, which Second Amendment advocates, most would probably back that statement.
Well, in what you were saying a second ago, you know, people who have a mental illness are actually, there are many cases if they're not federally allowed to hold and to possess a firearm under 18 U.S. Code 922G. I know that by heart because of what I do for a living. But under 18 U.S. Code 922G, person who has been involuntarily committed to a mental institution is not able to possess a firearm. Neither is a habitual drunkard. I mean, it's just, you know, or someone who is addicted to an illegal substance. And so you've got all the, and someone who's been convicted of a domestic violence claim. And so it names all the different criteria in which you cannot possess a firearm. And so, you know, you look at the guy who did the Charleston shooting. Mm-hmm. You know, our system failed twice. He went and bought a gun, but yet he should not have been able to. He was on Suboxone, which is the drug that they use to get someone off of, I think it's one of the strong cocaine, heroin, or something like that.
Okay.
And so he was on that. And also, too, he had, I think it was a restraining order or something like that, but he went to buy a gun, and he was able to purchase one, and yet the NICS background check failed. And so until we get a working system in place, like, what are you going to do, restrict lawful citizens from being able to own guns? I mean, heck, you need to be able to protect your family. Until they can declare a zone, hey, this is a gun-free zone. Parkland High School, for example, was a gun-free zone.
Yeah.
There were no guns allowed in there except for the one guy who was a bad guy who had a gun. And guess what? He did a lot of bad things. And, you know, we had the kids in Birmingham this week, you know, who were up there and protesting, and they have a pack that they're going in. They're doing a prayer group. I am very glad they're doing this, and they're raising awareness for it. But we need to stop our violent culture and recognize that there are people out there that, you know, that need to be there with guns who are going to do violence on our behalf.
And speaking of Parkland, that was one of the experts they rolled out on, I think, CNN last night, Anderson Cooper. They had David Hogg, you know, the student who has, I guess, become the most outspoken Parkland shooting survivor. We've all seen him in the news, but what does he know? You know, I'm not sure that he knows anything about 3D printers. I'm not sure he knows much at all about weapons. But CNN had him on last night, I believe, to discuss this 3D printing story. And you said most people want lawfully abiding citizens to be able to own weapons. It is a central theme of our democracy. But there are a lot of people out there, a whole lot, that really don't want lawful abiding citizens to be able to own weapons. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of them are writing these stories that are spreading so much misinformation, not just about this current hot topic, but about weapons in general.
No, I totally agree. And that the person you mentioned is not exactly the best person to talk about 3D guns. Maybe he went and learned it overnight or something like that, and I missed out on that. But, you know, he is a very articulate person at communicating a liberal message, which is exactly what CNN may want or Anderson Cooper may want. And he served his purpose for them. If you want to talk about 3D guns, you know, talk to someone who knows about it. Bring on a federal firearms license dealer on there. Bring on a gun manufacturer to talk about it and be like, hey, here what the issues are. You know, talking about school security, I think that there we had, Parkland was an interesting case. They had an armed resource officer who was on site and, you know, and he could have done something about it. The question is, you know, one, why are we not guarding? Why don't we have armed security officers at every single school? You know, and whether it's a police officer or whether it's a, you know, law enforcement resource officer, or, you know, to me, there's what, 96,000 public schools in this country, and then if you took the 3.4, you know, sorry, if you paid each guard, you supplement every guard there, and paid them $40,000 a year, $45,000 a year, that'd cost you what, $3.4 billion, I think.
Ooh.
Okay, still, but to protect your schools.
Yeah,
right?
So major thing that a lot of people would like.
I think actually that's times two. You have to have two officers at every school. So put two officers in every single school, but where do you get all those law enforcement officers from? Hey, veteran unemployment's, what, 27%? You know, why not take veterans, the guys who've gone and been in combat zones, who are not going to be like the resource officer in Parkland High School, guys who've served their country, who've been in combat, who understand what it's like, and who will sit there and be able to who have already put their life on the line to protect someone else, to contribute to something greater than themselves. Why don't you put veterans in every single school, guys who've been and have a succinct training package that is built specifically for schools, not for a law enforcement program or something like that, but something that's catered towards, hey, you're going to have this type weapon in a school where if you miss, you're going to hit somebody.
Yeah. I see some calls starting to stack up here. Stay on the line with us. We'll get to you right after the break. 251-343-0106. If you want to be a part of this conversation, you can text us. You can call. It's both the same number. Also, we're online, fmtalk1065.com. Coming back right after this.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Time is 12:36. This is Jonathan McConnell. Welcome back to FM Talk 106.5. And we have Jay from Mobile on the phone. Jay, are you there?
Hey, Jay, you hear us right now? Well, apparently not. We'll have to put Jay on hold. Hopefully we can get back with him. Philip, if you don't mind trying to get with Jay in there. But the number, if you want to call in, 251-343-0106.
And, you know, picking up from where we were talking about is if you actually had school resource officers, you know, that were properly, that were trained in doing that in at every single school, then I think that you would actually have a, you know, that's A level, right? Mm-hmm. That's level B. But I think that if you had literally people who were trained in defending a school, like this is your specific job, I think that, and that was what their main focus was, and going in and gathering the intelligence, kind of like what everybody's, well, what our veterans have been doing for the last 17 years of this insurgency that we've been fighting, right? Uh-huh. Where you actually have to go and identify, hey, this guy might present a problem, but right now he's a normal part of the school, the student body at the school. But you know what? Something looks a little bit different about him lately. Oh, hey, something's going on with his life. His family's having some issues. But guys who are able to detect that and pick up on that, you pick up the training from that, and then you back that up also with firearms training. Because I'm sorry, I'm an incredible shot with the pistol, but I'm not going to take a shot with there a bunch of kids running around the hallway. It's going to take a lot for me to take that shot. And I can tell you that your minimal standard for firearms training is not going to cut it, and it needs to be an elevated standard that you have there.
And I think there are multiple great reasons to have veterans and, I guess, current military members that are here on the mainland, that having them working in the schools, because, of course, you have a more advanced person that's holding the weapon there and protecting your kids, the students that are there. But also, it's a good thing for our veterans, giving them a job when they come back from overseas. It's win-win.
Yeah, absolutely.
We do have Jay back on the line. Let's see. Hey, Jay, are you there?
Yes, sir. I appreciate you having me on the call. I'd like to say this. I don't, you know, is there a time and place to have a guard at the school? Absolutely. As a general rule, I'm probably against it. But what I am for goes back years ago when Bill Clinton was going to put 100,000 police officers on the street. Why don't you take off the street 100,000 criminals and you won't need your 100,000 police officers? Liberals have gotten so bad at wanting to give everything to everybody, let everybody in the country, let everybody do what they want, and then when it blows up on their face, they ignore the problem that created it and blame something else. We have to start using common sense, and unfortunately, common sense is not common anymore. Thank you.
Hey.
And we can't, one more thing. We can't be afraid to hurt people's feelings. Nowadays, we'll blame something for everything. You know, we blame the Confederate flag for issues. We blame Donald J. Trump. Why don't people start taking responsibility of their own self?
Jay, well, thanks so much. We appreciate that. And you know, I will say I wish that we could solve our prison overcrowding problems. You know, to me, it is truly amazing. But if putting everybody in jail was the solution, then once again, that wouldn't even solve the Chicago issue.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, that's the issue, is we there are so many criminals out there.
Yeah, that was my first thought when he said that. We're going to have to build more prisons, if that's the case,
yeah.
If we're going to arrest 100,000 more people. Sticking on the phone lines here, hey, here's Cade in Mobile. Hey, Cade, how you doing?
Yes, sir. How you doing today?
Doing great. What you have to say on this topic?
Well, thank you for taking my call. I just want to give this simplistic answer that everybody has failed all over this country to figure out. We in America are divided, the states are divided up in counties, got some districts and territories. In each one of those areas, you have a sheriff, which is the representative of the law in that area, okay? Whether there's a town or it's all rural, it doesn't really matter, but the sheriff is in charge of that county, okay? We already have, school employees as a crossing guard. Why don't you take every crossing guard, fire them, and then give them the option to be rehired, same amount of.
You there, Cade?
Guys of the sheriff, okay, so that they don't lose any time in, and you hire one more officer, one more sheriff, deputy, to work the afternoon, and so you have a sheriff, law representative, deputy showing up in the morning to help them children cross the school, get in, all that, and then you have another one that relieves him about half a day, probably about 1:32, and he shuts down the school location. So you have a law representative that has the authority to have a gun, that is trained, has a legal entity to be there, and you're not, well, we trained some teachers and they've got the guns, and well, this one had a false diploma, and you have all these other issues. Okay? That's the answer, and you only have to hire one other person. That's it. But everybody else wants to do all, let's arm the teachers. I mean, these teachers didn't go to college and go to school to come out and then have to be armed to do their job. That's not what they did. They want to educate our children. Okay? That needs to be their focus. They got enough on their plate because most of them are broke trying to educate our children because the school systems won't fund their schools correctly. They're coming out of their own pocket trying to supply the children for what they need when they don't have it.
Well, Caden, I think you're right, but the thing is, though, is that, you know, did a crossing guard sign up knowing that they were going to one day be a guard and be called to do that? And I think that you know,
well, crossing... hey, if you don't want to do the job, and you can find something else to do, and we can hire a whole new person to fill in. But guess what? When there's a state of war, things change. When there's rationing, things change.
Exactly, but if you have someone who's going to go and be a crossing guard and wants to be a crossing guard, then you're going to sit there and you're going to say to them, okay, hey, guess what? Now you are also a guard. I don't think that you create a guard overnight. I think that you need someone who has thousands of hours of training. I want someone, if you're going to protect my child, you're not a crossing guard who's also a guard. You are someone who is literally going to put your life on the line on behalf of someone else. That's
well,
why
that's
I think
why they need to be in that position where they have the option to retire out, we'll pay you on out, and we'll hire a whole new person and train them under the supervision of the sheriff, and they're fully vested and fully trained into the laws of, you know, of what they need to do and be trained correctly. Now, I understand what you're saying is, hey, you got the school union and all this other stuff, but look,
never mentioned
that crossing guard only works 3 to 4 hours a day. That's it. Just like the school bus drivers, they get work 3 to 4 hours a day. But they get full benefits, just like teachers in there that are sticking their neck out trying to protect our children and teach them at the same time from getting shot up. Now, that don't make any sense. You need to get as much as you can out of what you're paying somebody. I work a full 12, 14-hour day, okay? So, that doesn't really make any sense. If they hired on... But I've worked a job, the company came in, got bought out, and they said, well, you can come on in and we'll rehire you as a new employee, and you have to kind of either start over, or you might have some carryover benefits from what you were time vested in.
Yeah, and Kate, I agree with you on that. The thing is that you would actually have to go through and you have to requalify constantly. I mean, like, that's the thing, is shooting is a perishable skill. And so, I mean, I would say 2 to 4 times a year, you would need to requalify. And if you had a standard and your screening process was urgent enough that your crossing guards could make it through that is a great idea. But they would just need to make sure that you had the right tool.
I'm not trying
there.
To put people out of a job. I'm trying to reassign them. That's all you have to do.
I am unapologetically trying to put people out of the job if it comes down to my child's safety. I could care less whether they're out of a job. I want
to
make sure that we have safe.
To fulfill the need that is necessary at this time.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and that may be one option, but I will say I am unapologetically trying to keep kids safe. Don't care about who's losing a job or what, because I'm not going to have another child lose a life. Who's our next caller?
Yeah, we appreciate that, Cade. Let's stay on the lines here. Talk to David in Mobile. Hey, David.
Hey, guys. I have no problems with armed resource officers being trained and having those thousands of hours of service. But if you, like Jonathan was saying, if he's in that situation and he's got that training, he would be very hesitant to pull the trigger with thousands of kids running around. You know, here's an idea: canine dogs. You know, they're very well trained, and they're the ones that are best trained, you know, they're able to focus in those hectic situations.
They do, and they'd be phenomenal. The only thing on cost-wise on that training, we have canine dogs at our company. You're talking about anywhere between $12,000 and $20,000 per dog, and then the training that goes along with that, and each one of them have to have a handler. I don't know that's the cheapest solution, which I'm also not about the cheapest solution. I just want what's going to keep my family safe.
And then a couple of months ago, the Secret Service came out with a report on mass shooting situations, on how to reduce them and prevent them. And they said, that, in their opinion, the best way to do it is threat assessments. If somebody's presenting behavior or symptoms that may present a threat to the students at the school needs to have a threat assessment procedure in place to identify those behaviors and get those people the help that they need so they don't get to the point that they feel like they have to shoot up a school.
And you are 100% right, right? So prevention is the best solution here. And, you know, having a process in place, but the kid in Parkland, you know, the police had been to his house. And yet he still had an AR-15 there. I mean, there's a lot of blame that can go around there, you know, especially to the foster parents who were letting them stay at their house, you know, but the school officials, people who he had been reported in several cases. I mean, so, you know, what do you do? I mean, we have that saying that if you see something, say something. Great. But when you say something to the government, what do they do about it? And what is the process in order to vet them? If you don't like one of your neighbors and all of a sudden they decided they're going to report you for something, then, you know, you have a police officer that shows up at your house, that doesn't mean that your firearms get taken away. But what is the rational and reasonable way of vetting someone to determine whether they're a threat or not?
Well, here's the thing. If the Secret Service does a threat assessment on somebody, that may write a letter or phone the White House and may even present, distress behavior or tone in their voice, they're going to do a threat assessment on you, and you may never even know that they did one.
That's true. That's true. Well, we've got to go on break, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
It's 12:53. This is Jonathan McConnell. Welcome back to FM Talk 106.5. Sean Sullivan's on vacation this week, and we've been talking about the Parkland Parkland shooting and gun control. And I think Dalton, you had one more thing to say about Governor Ivey's proposal.
Yeah, because we've been talking about school resource officers and, you know, how difficult it is with the number of schools you mentioned earlier that are here in the United States. I mean, there are so many schools, and how difficult it would be to staff each school with a well-trained armed officer. But one thing that's been in the news here in the state, at least since earlier this year when Governor Kay Ivey announced the School Sentry program, and she kind of put this together, or she says it's an option for schools that don't have resource officers. And the specifics here, sentry candidates would go through training with state police, and the sheriff would decide whether to deputize them as a reserve deputy. And we're talking about school administrators. I'm not sure if teachers would be involved in this plan, or just, you know, principals, vice principals, you know, higher ups in school systems. But sentry candidates would go through training with the state police, and the sheriff would decide whether to deputize them. The proposal was one of the recommendations of the School Safety Task Force. Remember when Ivey created that? WPMI was reporting on this and talking about Baldwin County, how they have armed law enforcement officers in schools in Baldwin County. But Mobile, bit of a different story, but that's kind of now that school is starting back these next couple of weeks, that school sentry program kind of making its way back through the news this week.
You know, it is, and this, I mean, and Governor Ivey has that is a solution, right? It's better than doing absolutely nothing. And, you know, I think a lot of people gave me a hard time about
that would have been fun,
criticizing Governor Ivey yesterday, because she didn't want to debate. And I'm gonna hit her again on it, because, you know, she's got quoted again by saying the media, there's only two people that mentioned debates. It's the media and her opponent. I don't know that I would consider myself the media, and I know a lot of people that love to hear a debate. And, you know, beat him on the issues, win this war of ideas that are out there. I tend to lean a little bit conservative, and well, that's probably a little bit of an understatement. I lean very libertarian, but you know, I lean conservative. Like, you've got the better ideas, go out there and beat him on it. Walt Maddox has an idea. You know, he talks about gun control in schools, and he's like, you know, hey, the only people that are allowed to do it would be school security officers. So what we currently have in place. Well, hey, you know what? That's really doing nothing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So go and beat him on ideas. Talk about healthcare and what our plan is for healthcare, beating it, or you know, having insurance, you know, having health insurance, and you know, whether to expand Medicaid or not to expand Medicaid, and how to fund that, how to fund our infrastructure. I mean, that's something that I think that this is the one time of every 4 years that we go through and talk about state politics, and we're missing an opportunity to go and build the brand. And she's not doing it. And, you know, like, it's not politically expedient of her to go and debate. No, it's not. But it's all about accountability, and I don't believe in free rides.
And that quote you just read from her, the only people that care, the press and Walt Maddox.
Yep.
Funny enough, we have a poll up on our FM Talk 106.5 website. It's had plenty of votes, and you could still vote. I think we're probably going to have this up for a little while longer since there's 90-something days until the general. But the question is, should Kay Ivey debate her gubernatorial opponent, Walt Maddox, before the general election? Right now, yes has 58% of the vote, and no has 42% of the vote. And I imagine that most of the people that voted in that were not members of the press or Walt Maddox.
Yeah. So Walt Maddox gets one vote there, and but no, you're right. I mean, I think that the people out there want to hear that exchange of ideas. The 42% probably are sitting there saying, you know, she shouldn't, for the political reasons she shouldn't. But you know what? Like, if you're a fan of exchanging ideas, and if you're a fan of out there and trying to, you know, hey, I may not agree with you on everything, but let's at least have a civil discussion. Let's have that civil discussion. And you do that now instead of after the election. Because if you don't debate, if you wouldn't debate, if she's not going to debate him, then how are Democrats going to come to the table when she tries to push her agenda starting in January?
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah. And on top of, I mean, you just mentioned it's a better way, these debates, it's a better way to come up with good solutions. Because right now, you just read what Walt Maddox was saying about resource officers, and I just read what Kay Ivey thinks about maybe arming school administrators. If they were actually able to get up there and civilly, which, you know, that's a whole nother issue in itself, if they actually got up there on the debate stage and civilly debated, which I don't think would happen, I think there'd be barbs thrown and we wouldn't really get anywhere like we've seen with so many other debates, but we'd be getting further than we are now. But they would be able to put their ideas up there, put them to the test against each other. Maybe we'd be able to work out a better system.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's what it comes down to, is it, you find that compromise, right? And you see, you know, Walt or Mayor Maddox, what are your hesitations behind having people that are trained as school security officers being in schools? We'll talk to you at the bottom of the hour, at the top of the hour. Thanks so much for having us. FM Talk 106.5.